Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shaped the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
We welcome into Catholic Sports View Thomas Rupp, the author of Rockne and Jones, Notre Dame, USC, and the Greatest Rivalry of the Roaring Twenties. Quite a title for the book. Mr. Rupp, thank you for joining us here on Catholic Sports View.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We want to talk about the whole process of writing the book, what you learned about coaches Rockne and Jones. I kind of want to start off with what gave you that idea. You've never written a book before, correct? What gave you the idea to say, hey, I want to write a book about this subject?
That's correct. I'm not a writer by profession or had authored in any books before, and I'm just kind of an average, everyday football fan. And what really inspired me was kind of following the back and forth between the fans of the two schools on internet fan boards. And I started saying to myself, well, let's see what really happened in that game or whatever. And started looking up the history, and it just fascinated me so much. I thought, this would make a great story and someone should tell it. And it just kind of grew from there.
There's been other books, of course, written about the rivalry, about the coaches themselves. Did you think you had a fresh perspective to bring to the story?
Well, there's been many, many books, of course, about the life of Knute Rockne. And there's been several books about the football series between the two schools. And they delve in a little bit to the sort of off-the-field events surrounding those games. But no one had really looked into how this series started and kind of what made it unique. And I thought that would, create a fresh perspective. So I just went from there and started really digging in to the history around the era of the 1920s and how this football series began.
People may not know how long this rivalry has been going on. In the early years, Notre Dame had a rivalry with Army. That was kind of a rivalry, early on. But this rivalry has really had staying power, unlike so many others. Why has this rivalry between two schools who don't have any geographic location next to each other, why has this lasted so long?
Well, I think that's one of the things, at least, that makes the series different is most rivalries you can think of, especially in college football, are what I call natural rivalries. Michigan and Ohio State, that goes back to a feud before those areas were even states in the Union. Harvard and Yale, even Army and Navy, although they're not, those schools aren't geographically connected, but they're both part of the military establishment. USC and Notre Dame are a little bit different because there's really no natural reason like that for them to be rivals. And I think it's just because of the era, because of how huge football became in the 1920s, the Rockne's great personality and what a celebrity he became, it became a huge deal, a huge event in the 1920s. And it just, the two schools have typically fielded great teams. And it's just been something that is one of the few traditions we have left, I think, from the 1920s that is still with us today.
Yeah, so true. Thomas Rupp, the author of Rockne and Jones, a book you can find certainly on Amazon and all the other ways that you can buy books out there, certainly available to you. Joining us here this week on Catholic Sports View, we're talking about the rivalry between Notre Dame and USC. How did this rivalry even get started? How did these two teams get together the first year?
Well, it's kind of a long story. Knute Rockne and Howard Jones first met way back when, before Rockne was even head coach. They both had a common opponent coming up, and they were in the press box together. Then, as Notre Dame became more and more powerful as a football program, the anti-Catholic bias in many members of the Big Ten, which Notre Dame was trying to get into, it was difficult for Rockne to schedule those teams. Howard Jones was the coach at Iowa at the time, and they were able to schedule a game at Iowa's field, and it was kind of a big game. Howard Jones' team was able to break Notre Dame's win streak, and kind of it was a pretty big upset. And that kind of started their bonds together. Then after in 1925, when Howard Jones came out to USC, the powers that be at USC, they were having difficulty with some of their conference rivals, and they wanted to get another big marquee game on their schedule. And overtures were made to Notre Dame, which were rebuffed by and large. In fact, it's a fairly well-known story. USC tried to hire Rockne as their head coach when they let go Elmer Henderson, that was the coach before Howard Jones. the key thing that happened was there was a lot of anti-Catholic, let's call it shenanigans in the stands, rough treatment at the Nebraska home field that didn't sit well with the fathers and others at Notre Dame. And so that caused a break in relations between the two teams, leaving the opening for USC to finally schedule Notre Dame. And specifically how that came about is a little subject of controversy.
Well, obviously these two programs have become, arguably the two most storied programs in all of college football. So the fact that they do, play each other and have played each other for so long just adds to it. I mean, there's so much mystique behind, what this has evolved to over the years.
I also think that sort of the popular perception of the two schools, Notre Dame obviously has changed a lot since the 1960s when I first started watching these games, but it still kind of represents the old school. The Catholic Church, the Midwest. USC has always been clear back to the 1920s, kind of the Hollywood side, a little more flashy. Today we have Traveler, running around the field and sort of all the Trojan regalia and all that. So there's kind of a lot of symbolism and kind of almost show business involved, I think, in terms of the image of the two schools.
Thomas Rupp joining us, the author of Rockne and Jones, Notre Dame-USC and the greatest rivalry of the Roaring Twenties. And like as I say, a lot of people may not realize that the rivalry goes back that long. USC as a school has been involved in a lot of historical things, over the years. Sam Cunningham and Alabama and Bear Bryant and that whole thing and black players maybe finally being part of the Alabama program because of Bear Bryant seeing that. So, SC's been a historical program on so many different levels over the years. Do you get a sense that is part of what helps drive the rivalry as well?
I think so. It's interesting that USC is actually, in two unique rivalries. Their rivalry with UCLA is probably the only one in the country between two major schools in the same city. And then they have the rivalry with Notre Dame, which is probably the only real, true, long-lasting intersectional rivalry. We know that Notre Dame had a good rivalry with Miami for a while. They've obviously had good rivalries on and off with Michigan, but those aren't played every single year. The only time since 1926 that USC and Notre Dame haven't played were about 2 or 3 years during World War II because of travel and security restrictions. But as soon as the war was over, the series started right back up again.
The 1920s were the Roaring Twenties, as it's called, right? I mean, everything mm-hmm. was much different. Ty, give us a sense of what the era was like for football because, football's still pretty much in its infancy at that point.
Well, it's interesting when you start to look into it how a lot of the things that we're experiencing today were kind of going on in the 20s and a little before that, but especially in the 1920s. For example, there's a lot of talk about the dangers of playing football today and CTE and that sort of thing. And there had long been efforts to ban what I'll call gridiron football as opposed to rugby or soccer or other types of games because of the danger. And it was World War I that really made football boom because everyone was looking at all the meat grinder in Europe with thousands and thousands and thousands of troops being killed on a daily basis. And all of a sudden, football didn't seem so bad. They also used it as the game of football as a training method to build camaraderie and teamwork in the training camps that the American Army and Armed Forces in general set up during World War I. So in the post-World War I era, football, before it had been mostly kind of an upper-class college boy kind of sport, now farm boys were playing football and the common man, and it just became this huge phenomenon. By 1920, you were playing before maybe 5,000 people in the stands. By 1930, over 100,000 people were showing up at these giant stadiums that were built throughout the course of the decade.
We know that any good rivalry needs, successful participants. And we know Notre Dame and SC have won national titles, multiples over the years, and had so many Heisman Trophy winners, great times. It seems as if at some point the rivalry kind of fell on hard times a little bit, and mostly because Notre Dame's program kind of hit the skids a little bit. SC, too, at dead times has come in and out. But see, is the rivalry still as strong today as it's ever been? And has it survived, those years where, we've seen less than ideal teams come out of these programs?
Well, the only thing certain in life, I guess, has changed. So, it's hard to predict the future. But you're right. I mean, again, when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, that's when USC kind of had the upper hand. Mm-hmm. After John Robinson left as USC coach, Notre Dame was able to run off, I think, 13 straight years without losing. There was a one tie in there. Again, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. Internet, cable sports, there's so much more on TV. Back in the old days, you didn't see that many games. But I do think that the nature of the tradition still counts, I think. I think people like tradition. And I think that, you know, Notre Dame has had its ups and downs, but the teams are generally speaking, have been pretty good squads. SC seems to be on the ascendancy. They're having a rough time for a while there. But I think moving forward that there'll still be a strong interest in this series.
Yeah, it was important to Lou Holtz to win the SC game. It was important to John Robinson. It was important to John McKay to beat Notre Dame every year. You know, those were big dates circled on the calendar. Was it as important to Rockne and Jones in those early years to beat that rival?
I believe so. There's quite a bit of information I have in the book about how the coaches prepared for the games. Howard Jones often had closed practices both while at Iowa and at USC before the Notre Dame game. In the very early days, it was even sort of a questionable matter whether scouting an opponent was kind of according to Hoyle or not, but they both sent out scouts. There was quite a bit of preparation and emphasis towards winning that game. What's interesting about the USC-Notre Dame rivalry, at least in the early years, was how much mutual respect there was. And again, there was nothing specific. You weren't like at USC and UCLA. You didn't kind of have bragging rights around town for a year. So I do think it really is unique amongst the college football rivalries for the basis of how it began and sort of what it represents even today.
I guess Army Navy obviously is still going strong, but
of course, and there, you know some people argue that Ohio State Michigan is right. The greatest rivalry. I mean, both these coaches grew up in an era that was more like the, you know, literally was the 1800s, yeah, and not the 1900s. So it had kind of had that old fashioned respect.
So true. A quick break here on Catholic Sports. When we come back, more with author Thomas Rupp. He's written this book, Rockne and Jones, about Notre Dame and USC and the great rivalry as it got going there in the 20s. And of course, we encourage you to go ahead and purchase the book. Go to wherever it is you purchase books at. And we'll be right back right here on Catholic Sports. You stay with us. Catholic Sports View. Bob Gibson, along with Thomas Rupp, the author of Rockne and Jones, a brand new book out chronicling the Notre Dame USC rivalry. And as we were talking before, you know, a lot of books have been written about this rivalry and about these coaches. But you know, one thing that really I think the book probably gets into more is the personalities of these two coaches. They couldn't be more polar opposite from one another, right?
Yeah, there's a certain amount, I think, of yin and yang relationship there. Rockne was well known, of course, as being kind of flamboyant, very glib type of guy. It's kind of hard to imagine him because, first of all, it's hard to imagine a society without television, but he was a huge celebrity. I mean, bigger than like Saban at Alabama or Urban Meyer at Ohio State. I mean, he really was a general entertainment media kind of celebrity in his day. Howard Jones is a complete opposite. He's very quiet. When I started, there was very little that I knew about him. He was more the kind of personality you might expect from sort of this perception of a more traditional Catholic school. Rockne might be the guy that would be more at home in Hollywood. So you kind of, like I said, you had kind of had that duality. But yes, they were very different individuals.
Yeah, you know, so much has been written about Newt Rockne. And I noticed you used the pronunciation Canute.
It should be Canute. That's actually how it should be pronounced.
Interesting. So in your research, you found out that we've all been mispronouncing it over these years?
Yeah, it's just, it's like the Danish Canute, which is spelled C-A-N-U-T-E. That's really the way it should be. The K is not silent.
Interesting. See the things you learn if you do the research, right?
I mean,
it led you down this path to learn about these guys.
As I recall correctly, if you watch Canute Rockne All-American, which his wife, Bonnie Rockne, had a big say in what they did, that they pronounced it Canute then as well.
Interesting. But not as much written about Howard Jones. I mean, you're right. As I did research, you know, coming into this to talk with you about it, I said, man, there's just not much. I mean, within USC, you know, obviously people know the name Howard Jones, but I mean, here's a guy who goes back to the turn of the century, the early 1900s, was a coach at, Yale, won a national title at Yale. I believe it was at Syracuse. I mean, there was about a three-year run where he was at a different school every year. How in the world did he ever settle at USC all the way across the country?
It's very true that very little has been written about Howard Jones. He really is one of these characters. It's kind of a bronze plaque on the wall at the Rose Bowl and the Coliseum. And I tried to flesh him out as much as possible. It was kind of difficult to do so. I'm of the belief that even the most kind of a sterile, calm kind of personality still is a human being with emotions, and I think that's true of Howard Jones. I was able to dig out a lot of old newspaper articles that at least gave me the overview, and I was able to track down his daughter and interview her before she passed away several years ago.
It had to be fascinating to talk to his daughter, I'm sure, and get what information you could. What was she able to offer about her father, about how she knew him?
Well, one of the things that stands out in my mind is asking about what she remembered from when Knute Rockne died in 1931, and she indicated that he was very upset and basically crying. I'm not thinking he broke down, was bawling or anything, but you know, it was a very clear exhibition of inner emotion that she remembered. Even she was only 4 years old at the time, and she remembered that very much.
Wow, interesting. Thomas Rupp joining us, the author of Rockne and Jones, about the Notre Dame USC rivalry, and of course, you know, how it played out, you know, within the 20s as it's gone on. You know, since then, two fascinating characters, you know, Rockne and Jones, but obviously the players play a big part in this as well. Is there a quote-unquote typical Notre Dame player and a quote-unquote typical USC player that each one of these coaches wanted to have in their squads?
Well, I will say this, that Knute Rockne's style was geared towards deception. They ran what was called the single wing back in mm-hmm. those days, which is kind of a generic term for different offenses, but he did a lot of tricky maneuvers with the ball, a lot of faking. Howard Jones was more about power. In fact, I guess there were cases in his tenure when the players would go up and tell the other side what play they were going to run. They'd just run it anyway and smash the guys and gain 15 yards or whatever. So I think that Rockne favored a little smaller, more agile, faster players, and he threw the ball a lot more, at least earlier and on, whereas Howard Jones was more of a running guy. His teams were called the Thundering Herd because of their sweeping running plays and just bowling people over.
Were either one of these guys considered revolutionaries within the game?
I would say, you know, especially today, Knute Rockne is. The reason why we have the rule where you have to be set for 1 second before the ball is snapped is because of Rockne's offense. His shift, they would shift right before the ball was snapped, and the other coaches said, that's not fair, you know, our defense can't get set. So we have that rule today because of him. Howard Jones was considered more of a less of an innovator. However, there are things that he developed. The trap play was an invention of Howard Jones and actually plays a pretty big role in the 1921 game between Iowa and Notre Dame that Notre Dame hadn't seen it before.
Right. We know the Jones, you know, died very early. I think he was only 55 years old when he passed away, right?
Yeah, he had a heart attack in 1941, a few months before, you know, Pearl Harbor and World War II began. Yeah, and it was very, he had just seen his doctor a short time before then and been given a clean bill of health. And, of course, Rockne died very young because he died in a plane crash.
Right.
And what's interesting about that, I'm not even sure, thinking if I mentioned it too much in the book, but that was one of the first big accidents that drew a lot of attention and basically led to what we have today in the FAA and aircraft crash investigation.
Interesting. But so both men having made their imprint so young, I guess. So kind of surprised me. You think of a lot of college coaches. Maybe modern day you see a lot of younger men getting hired, but certainly the thought of you know, the middle-aged stoic guy, you know, being the college football coach. These guys were young men coaching football, you know, back in the day. And maybe that was just out of necessity because of how young the game of football was at the time.
Right. Especially with Howard Jones, when he first started, I mean, a lot of the coaches weren't professionals at all. They were just volunteers that served like a year, and then they went on to the next guy.
I know for Jones, at one point he got out of coaching, went into private business, I guess, and then was lured back into it.
That's another contrast. Knute Rockne's family moved to the United States from Norway when he was very young, didn't have a lot of money. Howard Jones came from an affluent family. They owned a paper mill, and he had been in that paper business for a while, but guys like him wouldn't consider coaching a real sort of legitimate profession until later on, as this football craze began to take shape. Then all of a sudden the salaries began being inflated and, you know, more like it is today.
Right. Obviously, you know, Rockne's legendary at Notre Dame. You know, we obviously have other coaches that have come at USC since then. I mean, it's I believe it's Howard Jones Field, right, that's named after him. But I don't think it's as much reverence maybe for Jones at SC as certainly Rockne is at Notre Dame.
No, at USC, the practice field is Howard Jones Field, right. But they have somebody else's name on there now who donated a lot of money. So, you know, in Los Angeles, it's kind of like, what have you done for me lately? But, I mean, I think Howard Jones is remembered. There was a story, whether it's true or not, that I heard that when John McKay became coach, he, like, burned all the Howard Jones game films because he didn't want to have that ghost sort of looking over his shoulder all the time.
Interesting.
But I think that Rockne definitely is more, if you watch the Notre Dame football broadcasts every Saturday on NBC, you'll see, you know, footage of him, and he's kind of the Washington Monument figure or whatever of Notre Dame football.
It's so true. A couple more minutes with Thomas Rupp, the author of Rockne and Jones, the Notre Dame USC and the Greatest Rivalry of the Roaring Twenties is the name of the book. What did you learn about this whole process of being an author for the first time? Did you ever, first of all, did you ever think you'd author a book? And what did you kind of learn out of this whole process?
No, I never really did. My family, I have a brother who was a history major in college. My parents were born, both of them, in 1915. So especially for my mom, I would hear stories of the parks in Los Angeles being set up with speakers so people could listen to the USC game. So I kind of had some flavor for that. I've always kind of had a flair for writing, I guess. I've been more in visual arts in my career, but I've come into this now in an era where the internet's really affect publication, and I don't want to say anything that's too derogatory or anything, but it's just, I think economics have driven things to the point where it's more difficult for publishers to make an investment in authors. So I'm kind of surprised at how much authors are responsible for their own promotion and that sort of thing.
Yeah, right. It's so true. And I know you're getting out and getting a chance to do maybe some signings or get a chance to promote the book. Give us some ideas of what you're doing out there to help promote it.
Well, I'm signing up some things right now. We're going to have a book signing at the Barnes & Noble store in Fullerton on Wednesday, October 18th at 6 p.m. We should be having some at the USC bookstores, but those dates haven't been firmed up yet. And there's some other things. We're having a kickoff event. It's kind of a private event on September 10th. But, you know, hopefully the word spreads a little bit.
You're here. You're in Southern California, so I would think the SC following of it is strong. How about from the Notre Dame side? You know, a lot of Notre Dame alumni here in California as well, but even from the school itself, and any feedback and anything from the people at Notre Dame?
Well, I've been talking to them for many years. They've been very helpful, as of course, the people at USC. That's a possibility to go back to Notre Dame for the game this year and have a book signing. We're still kind of talking about that. There's a lot of artifacts, photographs, and copies of documents from the Notre Dame archives that they gave me, and so they've been very positive. If I could add just one thing,
sure,
real quick, I'm really pleased to be here. Just in full disclosure, I'm not Catholic myself. I kind of tease a little bit the intertwining of football and Catholicism in the book. Hopefully readers won't find it blasphemous. But I do have to say that this whole thing, we wouldn't be here today if Rockne had been the coach of a Catholic university and what really was the vanguard of Catholic education in the United States. And, you know, he was not a Catholic when he started. So I don't think you can separate the Catholicism from this whole story, because there's a lot in there about acceptance in a largely Protestant society and so forth. And I just think that, you know, it's kind of appropriate that I'm here at a Catholic radio show.
Yeah. And so do you find a religious thread throughout the rivalry to an extent?
I think even to this day, you know, Notre Dame fans really kind of conjoin the football and the Catholicism, whatever their particular individual interpretation of that Catholicism is. I think that still exists to this day. I tease the USC side as being sort of the Hollywood sinners, you know, so to speak. Rockne once derisively called the USC football program that Chamber of Commerce program, I think he called it. So I tried to tease both sides equally. Like I said, I do think that if Knut Rockne had been the coach at Ohio State, I don't think his fame would have been as much. Yeah. And obviously this rivalry wouldn't exist.
There's still something about Touchdown Jesus. In
that's
Notre Dame, right.
That's right.
Thomas Rupp, I want to thank you for joining us here on Catholic Sports for you talking about the book again. It's called Rockne and Jones, Notre Dame, USC, and the Greatest Rivalry of the Roaring Twenties. Get out to your local bookstore, of course, Amazon, all the other ways that you purchase books. There's a website as well, right? People can get more information?
Yeah, you can go to www.rockneandjones.com. TheBook.com.
RockneandJonesTheBook.com. We'll send everybody there as well, and we'll remind everybody as well at the end of the show one more time about how to get it. Thanks again for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, that's Thomas Rupp, the author of Rockne and Jones, and we'll have more on Catholic Sports View when we come back right here on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Look,
let's welcome in the head coach at J. Sarah High School, and that's Pat Harlow. Coach, thanks for taking a couple of minutes to join us here on Catholic Sports View.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Congratulations. A week one victory over what we know is a good Corona Del Mar program out there in Newport Beach. You know, obviously it feels good to get the first win under your belt.
Always good to get a win. It was a little bit ugly for us from a penalty standpoint, and it took us a little while to get going offensively. Hopefully we'll get that cleaned up this week and have a good showing against Alamany.
Yeah, as we've continued our previews, you know, previewing all the football programs down the Trinity League, the one thread that seems that heard from all the coaches is that you know, everybody's ready. Everybody's ready to look at an opponent, look at somebody other than hitting the teammate you know, next to them. Were your kids the same way, you know, really ready to get after an opponent?
Absolutely. And sometimes you get that, you get a little sloppy play because of that, because you're so excited to go out there and perform on Friday night. You know, this thing, you know, it seems like it really started last January, you know, so it's a long time for these young men to sit there and wait for it. And then all of a sudden it's there and it's like, oh, wow, let's get going. And it's a little bit sloppy.
Right. You know, it's obviously a new era in J. Sarah Lyon football. Do you feel that way too? I mean, is that something that's in the back of your mind is, hey, we're starting a new era here at the school?
Well, we're definitely starting a new era, but we're also trying to continue what Coach Hartigan had built here, being mentally tough and disciplined. And he was in the stands the other night, and I was a little bit embarrassed by the penalties because he had to sit there and watch that. So, you know, it's definitely a new era. We're definitely different offensively and defensively, scheme-wise. We've got some kids that have come in that are going to help us out, so it's definitely a new era.
Yeah, obviously, you know, transfers is always a big thing in the off season. You know, your team, you know, no stranger to the transfer game. You got some nice players that came in and decided they wanted to be Lions this year.
We absolutely have, you know, and they've come in and they've worked their butts off, and they're great kids on top of it. So we're excited about it. We didn't have a ton come in, but the ones that came in are definitely game changers for us. And you know, I'm really happy about it. We got a couple of kids that were here. I left, and then they decided they wanted to come back, so I'm excited about that.
Is it easy for the kids like that to come in and mesh right away, or does it take a little bit of time to get to know, you know, the other kids and become a teammate?
Well, you know what, for the kids that came back, it was like they've been here the whole time. For the new kids, it definitely takes a little bit, but, you know, I'll take like the McLean brothers. They've been here since middle of January, early February, so they've been around us for quite a while. You know, the newest one is Jamel Henning. And, you know, he's still working his way in, you know, just getting used to everybody, used to how we practice and used to, you know, a training league competition.
It's all about having playmakers. You know, do you feel like you've got those playmakers now on both sides of the ball for you?
I do. I feel like we have some pretty explosive guys on offense. You know, we've got two just outstanding outside receivers. You know, we got Tyler Shimomura playing inside along with Tristan West and Eli Jefferson. And then running back, I think Al Fisher is just a grinder and makes things happen. His first touchdown on Friday night that really kind of changed the game for us, he got by himself. And then Matt Robinson's playing lights out. And, you know, Abdul Malik is doing a great job on defense for us along with our linebackers. And Sean Nielsen just played a heck of a game the other night. And he actually got the MVP for the defense as a nose guard.
Pat Harlow, J. Sarah head football coach, joining us on Catholic Sports View as we continue our previews of the Trinity League football schedule. You mentioned Matt Robinson. What improvements have you seen in his game in the offseason? And you know, how good can this kid be?
I mean, you know, he's become a true quarterback now. You know, before he relied on his legs solely to get out of trouble. I mean, he's always had a great arm, but his patience in the pocket, his understanding where the ball's supposed to go, get out on time, has just been tremendous. And really in the last 2 months, it's just been great.
Is that just a maturing process? I mean, you know, just maturing not only physically but mentally as well?
Well, I think that, and I think Coach Rossigno's done an amazing job with him as well. And he feels very comfortable with what Coach Rossigno's asking him to do. And they spend a lot of time together, so they're on the same page from a mental standpoint.
Coaches will use their non-league schedule, I guess, in different ways. It's kind of the same thing. I suppose you're getting ready for a league campaign, which we know in the Trinity League is 10 times harder than probably any other league. Do you feel confident that your non-league schedule is going to prepare you for that?
You know, I think we play a really tough, long week schedule. I mean, we've got, you know, CDM's a great program in Orange County. They came out and played really well. They're very well coached. They play with great effort. Then we've got Alamany from up north, and they're a solid, solid program with great coaching staff. And then we have Almont, who's always in the mix. And then we have Vista Marietta, who's traditionally been a great Inland Empire team. And then we finish off with Los Al, who's a perennial top 10 team in Orange County. So I think that's a pretty good way to get going.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good schedule. I just called the Mater Dei Amat game the other night, and you know, Amat gave Mater Dei a little run there for about a quarter, and they look like a better team this year for sure.
you know, they've got a lot of pride there. They've got such deep tradition at that school, and they're going to come out and play hard every week.
Yeah, absolutely. As everybody is at this time of year, especially. You talked about, you know, the kids getting out there and really wanting to get going. Do you find you have to dial them down maybe just a little bit? You know, not get too excited out there the first couple of weeks.
Well, I don't know if I've ever want to dial anybody down. You know, so you know, we'll always go with with them being a little bit overhyped than trying to get them going during a game. Now, I don't think any high school kid needs any motivation to get ready for a Friday night game.
Yeah, they better not, right?
We're in trouble if I have to give this great speech.
Pat Harlow joining us, head football coach at J. Sarah High School. The Lions 1-0 after a big win over Corona Del Mar to start officially week zero, as it's called these days. Yep. How did your summer go? I mean, did you feel good about the way the kids worked in the summer and then the chance to maybe play in some of the 7-on-7 tournaments?
You know, I think they worked extremely hard. You know, we have a new strength conditioning guy here, Todd Norman, who really got him prepared from a physical standpoint. And obviously, we spent quite a bit of time on the field trying to get, you know, the one thing we're still doing is we're still learning these new schemes offensively and defensively. So, you know, I don't think we'll really hit our stride until hopefully right when we hit about league, and that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, we talk about the league and how good that is. It's all about, you know, getting ready for that Trinity League schedule. Do you keep an eye out for what everybody else is doing, or you can't worry about what anybody else is doing at this point?
You know, we do obviously keep an eye on what's going on, but we're concerned about what we're doing every day to get better and taking every opponent. You know, it sounds very Bill Belichick-like, but it's on to this week is Alamany, and we'll worry about the next game when that one's over.
There's so much pressure, I guess, on both sides of the ball, really, but, you know, especially, I think, on the defensive side, because there's so many explosive offenses now, especially when you get into league play. I mean, across the board, obviously, in your non-league schedule as well, but especially in league. I mean, you know, these offenses, can put points on the board pretty quick. So I imagine you're really stressing on the defensive side of the ball over the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, I mean, every team in the Trinity League is just super explosive. You know, I mean, Modern Day didn't even throw the ball really last week, and they put up 35. The amount of athletes that Bosco has is crazy. Orange Lou is stacked from a skill standpoint. And so is, you know, Servite and Santa Margarita. I mean, they're all just absolutely stacked from athlete standpoint. So trying to slow guys down, it becomes in today's football almost, you know, you need to get two or three stops and hopefully you don't get, you know, offensively, you get the ball in the end zone a lot.
Yeah, so true. A little bit different over on campus this year. You guys are playing your games, starting this week on campus. How's that all working out for you?
I mean, it's been an unbelievable process to go through, and we've had so much support from some of our parents who've been super involved in it and the administration to get this going at home. And the school's excited. This community's excited. The kids are excited. So I'm expecting to come out really, really fired up on Friday night, even more so than normal, because this is the first time they've truly had a home game ever at this school.
Yeah,
I
was going to say the home games obviously played at Saddleback College, for since the beginning of the school, really. You're right. Pride's a good word. It's got to be a lot of pride to say, hey, here we are on campus. We get to stay here and play our games with everybody coming to our place.
Yeah, you know, and it's a great advantage for us because we're really the only Trinity team that actually has a home stadium. And so we only have it for this year, but we sure want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, so it's true. And everybody else plays off campus. You're absolutely right.
Yep.
You know, this will be a true home field advantage, hopefully, for the Lions. I know you're not, you're the football coach and you're concentrating on that, but so many changes at the school. The whole baseball field's getting redone. When I was over there over the summer, I was thinking, man, this is great. I mean, all the changes and all the improvements going into J. Sarah, this can only help with everything across the board in the athletic program.
Putting a lot of money into the athletic side is right now, but we also have a capital campaign to improve the school. So it's going to be great to get prospective families down here and feel the great vibe that this school has and get them excited about wanting to bring, you know, have their kids attend school here. And obviously that'll help our athletic programs, but, you know, Brett Case, just an unbelievable coach and what he's done. And Zach Brogdon's doing an amazing job with the basketball program. And, you know, we're surrounded by really good coaches and more importantly, good people at the school. So there's a lot of excitement going on around here right now.
Yeah, it's so true. We know you're in good hands with your athletic director, Chris Ledyard, as well, who's got that whole thing rolling over there at JCERA, that's for sure.
Oh, he's been a rock star, but yeah. he doesn't have any hair on his head, and it's probably a good thing because he'd probably be losing it if he did.
Last couple of moments with Pat Harlow, the head football coach at JCERA, as we continue our Trinity League previews of the football programs. Does your program change at all? And what I mean is your practice schedule, for summer versus, getting into the non-league and then versus league. Does anything change, or is there a consistency across the board when it comes to practicing?
It's really consistent. I think the kids can thrive off of that, knowing what's going on, when we're going to do, when we're hitting, when we're not, get some a chance to be mentally prepared. And so we've been super consistent in how we've practiced.
And it's important, right? I mean, the kids need that structure?
Absolutely. The young men especially, we're dealing with 14 to 17-year-old kids. And, the more structure you have, the better off they are. Everybody goes, everybody worries about their GPA during the season. And it's been a proven fact that athletes do better when they're in their competition season more so than they do in their off season.
Yeah, so true. Coach, as I hear around campus a lot, it's a good day to be a Lion. And it certainly is 1-0 to start the season. And we wish you luck the rest of the way. We'll be following you, and we can't wait to get out there and see what that crowd looks like at that home field this year.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope everybody comes out and gives great support to the Lions, and I hope we have a great year.
Yeah, absolutely. That's Pat Harlow, the head football coach at JCERA High School, and we'll have much more right here on Catholic Sports View when we come back right here on Immaculate Heart Radio.
Christ Fest 2017, a Christian music festival featuring Mac Powell from Third Day.
And I'll show you what I've seen.
Shane and Shane. Russia Fools and more. Saturday, September 9th at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. Honoring Sir Bruno Serrato and feeding OC kids. Christ Fest 2017. Presented by St. Joseph Health and Farmers and Merchants Bank. Get your tickets and more info now at ChristFestOC.com.
High school football with the executive director of the Honor Group, Coach Mark Soto. I really want to talk about this event. I know it's been going on for a few years now. I've had the honor of covering it the first year when you got this thing going, when it was at Oceanside High School a couple years back. I know it's moved around a little bit. It'll be at Cathedral Catholic High School this year, the football games down in San Diego. It's easy for us to talk about all the great football games, and we're going to get into that in a couple of minutes because there's so many great high school football games to talk about. But I want to talk about what the Honor Group does and what this organization means to all the great veterans and so many great members of the military, that are down in that San Diego area.
I'm honored to do this event. I mean, there's a lot of media that call me a promoter, and I'm not a promoter. I'm basically a football coach dad that had a vision that started on the football field while my son was at war. I've got two sons. One's in the United States Army, and he was a sniper in the Army. My other son was a U.S. Marine, or is a U.S. Marine, I should say. If I said was, they'll crucify me. Is a U.S. Marine, and was in a battle in 2010 in Afghanistan. And while he was part of the 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines, and they were going through the Helmand Province and trying to make that area safe, is when I got the vision for this event. And basically it happened because of this. There were so many of my friends that were becoming wounded and killed by being blown up. And then one of the Marines that was killed, I actually coached high school football for back in the mid-2000 range. And so it changed my life. And being a football coach, I wanted to do something to inspire the youth of America and really educate them about what a hero looks like. And what better way to do this than on the gridiron? So with what my son was going through, I wanted to develop something that would educate the youth of America while also raising money to give back to our military veterans. And that's where the Honor Bowl started. It started by a football coaching dad that wanted to do something to give back. And here we are. I mean, we've now become what I feel the best high school football showcase in America. And we're honored to bring this event down to San Diego because every year it gets bigger and bigger and better and better, and we raise more money for our military veterans. And that's what it's all about, my friend.
Yeah, it is so true. And the event, when you get a chance to put this in front of the kids, the high school kids who come and participate, how much of it is an eye-opening experience for them?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, I've had countless emails and school officials and principals and booster organizations write me letters after an audible just thanking me for the inspiration and the education we not only gave their student athletes and their coaches, but the community. I mean, these people see what we do on that football field, and they leave changed, and they leave educated, and they leave, you know, more inspired about what our military veterans do for our freedom. It's truly a wake-up call, and we want to keep doing it, and we want to expand it across the nation because there's so many people that aren't able to be a part of this, Bob. Well, now we hope to bring this across the nation so communities throughout America could see the honorable.
Is it important that people today, and not just kids, but adults, you know, there's generations of people who never served, don't know what it's like to serve. Obviously, it's very near and dear to your family. You know what it's like. You've seen two boys, your two sons go off and do it. Is it important to tell the stories and to let people know, you know, exactly what it means to go off and defend this great nation?
Bob, it wouldn't even be an honorable if we didn't do that. I mean, from the moment the teams arrive and they have a chance to go on to Camp Pendleton and be toured through Camp Pendleton and go to a memorial wall where the names of our nation's fallen are there, and they can hear about these men. I mean, we have wounded Marines that talk to them right from that memorial garden where their friends are, you know, memorialized on that wall. And then we go into the locker rooms before they go and play a game. Right before they go on that field, we knee up the athletes and remind them why they're here and why they're playing in this game. I can tell you right now, nobody leaves that locker room completely fired up. They just heard from a military commander. They just heard from a wounded Marine. They heard from a chaplain. And they heard from myself the story again about why they're there. And it's extremely powerful, and every one of those athletes leave changed.
Coach Mark Soto joining us, the executive director and co-founder of the Honor Group. They put on the Honor Bowl games coming up in just a couple of months here, early September, down in San Diego. Make sure you find the tickets and get out there and watch some great football. You know, obviously, you said you kind of came up with an idea. It's one thing to come up with an idea. It's another thing to make it into what it's become. I have to imagine there's lots of people that you talk to, that you approach, that just dove in headfirst along with you to put this together.
Oh, my goodness, buddy. It's truly been a labor of love. None of us in the nonprofit are paid. You know, basically, we do it because we really, really want to give back to our military veterans. And, you know, over the years, there's been people that have locked arm with us and see what we do and see the vision and have been very helpful. One of them is the community of Oceanside. They gave us our start. They basically opened up their school, opened up their doors and said, Coach, we're right here at the gates of Camp Pendleton. We love what you're doing. Bring it to our school. And for 3 years, you know, we started this whole thing right there in Oceanside. And then, you know, last year we thought we'd make a move and try the Orange County area up and had a great time in Mission Viejo. But we felt that we still needed to return back to the San Diego community, which, you know, first loved us and gave us our start. So now we're heading back down to San Diego at Cathedral Catholic, which, as you know, Bob, is a beautiful stadium.
Gorgeous.
A wonderful community. Their booster organization, their school administration, their athletes have completely jumped behind this event. And every time I go down there and I meet with them, I just get leave with goosebumps about how excited they are about bringing this event to their school.
you know, so much talk, of course, in Southern California football about the Southern section, but the San Diego section has so much great football. It doesn't surprise me that the folks down there in that San Diego section, you know, jumped at the chance to help put this together. I imagine there's coaches and programs that are lined up that want to play in this.
You know what? We have been very blessed with the teams from across the nation that have called us, that have sent us emails and said, you know, Coach, how do we become a part of the Honor Bowl? We never intended when we started this event that it would become like the best of the best high school football showcase. That's not what we intended. We really, truly wanted just to bring teams together to love and give back. But over the years, it's kind of morphed into this, you know, best of the best preseason opening football showcase that it really has become the premier showcase in America. And the teams that want to be in it, like, you know, St. Joseph Regional, St. Joseph Prep out of Philadelphia, IMG out of Florida, Punahou out of Hawaii, we are truly honored to do this. And the fact that schools want to become a part of it, I think, speaks to the educational mission behind our event. Because, face it, it's a football game, right? But the fact that the kids are leaving educated is what makes our event completely different.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a selling point. Not that you really need a selling point at this juncture, but it really is, I think, to the coaching staffs that probably say, hey, this is something that our kids are not only going to maybe get to travel from somewhere and have that experience, but just the experience of being part of this event and the people they get to meet along the way. That's going to take young men and make them into men and maybe send them along their path in life.
Absolutely. You couldn't have said that any better. When St. Joseph Regional came out from New Jersey last year, you know, we don't have the funds or the proceeds to pay for, you know, a 75-person team with all of their coaches and equipment to fly them out here. We can't do that, right? But the schools that come out and play in our event, they do all their own fundraising. They go out and get all their own sponsors, and they pay their way. And what a phenomenal thing for these coaches and students to do, to come out and be a part of the Honor Bowl, and then when they leave, have them call me and say, please invite us back. Please. I mean, this was the greatest event we've ever been involved in. Please. That, to me, speaks to the testimony of what we've developed. And like I said, buddy, we're honored, and we hope it goes on for years and years and years.
Yeah, and it certainly will. Thanks again for joining us this week right here on Catholic Sports View, where athletics meets faith. And we want to thank our guests this week. And if you'd like to hear a replay of this show or any of the others we've done on Catholic Sports View, just simply log on to OCCatholic.com/radio. Just click on our icon right there, and all those podcasts will load up for you, and you can listen to any of them. I am Bob Gibson. We thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on Immaculate Heart Radio.
ChristFest 2017, a Christian music festival featuring Mac Powell from Third Day.
And I'll show you what love sees when love sees you.
Shane and Shane. Rush of Fools and more. Saturday, September 9th at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. Honoring Sir Bruno Serrato and feeding OC kids. ChristFest 2017. Presented by St. Joseph Health and Farmers and Merchants Bank. All info at ChristFestOC.com. See Mac Powell from Third Day. Shane and Shane. Rush of Fools. Ike Indolo. La Cervis. Jimmy Crabity and Adam Bitter. Saturday, September 9th at Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove. Honoring Sir Bruno Serrato and feeding OC kids. Chef Bruno, what say you?
Please come. You come to see me on that event is like you help me to feed in a child.
Get your tickets and more info now at ChristFestOC.com.